So almost 10 million Optus customers have had their personal data hacked. We think much is still unclear about this giant data breach. But for millions of those people, the effects will be long-lasting and potentially very worrying. If you've had your data breached, what now? And what more can be done in future to protect consumers? I'd be very interested to hear from you if you've had your data stolen at some point in the past, whether that's now through Optus or another company. How did that play out for you? And has it changed the way you keep your data secure? Head to our Facebook page at ABCRN, look for the Life Matters post and tell us your thoughts there. Rachel Fork is our guest today. She's the CEO of the Cybersecurity Cooperative Research Centre. And we approached the ACCC to be part of this interview too, but sadly they weren't available today. Rachel, great to have you with us on the program.
Thanks, Hilary. Thanks for having me.
Now, how big is this breach? How bad compared to others that we know of in the past? And there's no shortage of them, are there?
No, well, this is the largest in Australia. Certainly, this is the largest cyber security breach that I'm aware of that we've had.
Wow. Okay. So short and sweet, that's the biggest that we've seen so far. Is it the worst in terms of how it happened, or do we not know the mechanics of it yet?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And it seems to me that the story seems to have changed. And look, it's not unusual that in the early days of a cyber breach, companies really don't know how it's happened or they're trying to get on top of the facts. As we know it, and as best I'm able to understand from public reports, this was not a sophisticated hack. So I'm also a little bit confused now because the Optus CEO has come out and said she can now say the data was encrypted. Well, again, I come back to simply it's now unencrypted. But there's a few key steps in the middle, but it's a little bit of a confusing story right now.
Yes, indeed. Well, early on, a source from Optus said, it was a human error, and that was quickly countered. Yep, no, they're now saying it's a sophisticated operation. Claire O'Neill, the Minister for Home Affairs and Cybersecurity, said, no, it's a basic hack. How much is it appropriate for companies to say, look, we can't disclose the information about how this happened because, you know, it compromises our systems? And how much is it important for them to be transparent?
Look, it's a balance of both. In the early days of a cyber hack or attack or a breach, you really are, particularly a large company like Optus, but any other, you're really trying to work out the how, who, what, when, where, and why. And you're trying to also be transparent with customers. Sometimes that takes days to work out. Sometimes it takes weeks. But I would have thought a pretty simple fact like the data was encrypted comes out pretty early on. And it didn't. And now what we do know is the data is out in the wild and it's unencrypted. So either it wasn't encrypted, it was encrypted and was what we call decrypted, so made open, or mysteriously something's happened in between. That sort of part of the story makes no sense to me. I think you're better off just simply saying early on in a breach, we know this has happened, we are terribly sorry for our customers, we're working hard to stop it and working hard to get across what's happened. Unfortunately, I think that's been a bit muddied in the middle.
How easy is it to unencrypt data?
Not easy at all, actually. You need to have the keys. You can do it. So, I mean, smart engineers, people can do it. But usually if it's encrypted, it's kind of like having it locked up. It's not readable. It's in a separate vault, if it's done properly. And only people who have the decryption keys or access can decrypt it. So either somebody's been compromised who could do it, but it's kind of irrelevant now saying it was encrypted because it's not. It's clearly out there for sale in an unencrypted and open form. But I come back to my original point, which I've made several times in the past, was they shouldn't have ever been storing this information.
So is this surprising to you that this has happened?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a telecommunications companies, rightly so, hold a lot of data about all of us. And this was pretty well hashed through during the metadata changes back in 2015-16. And there was a lot of debate around should it be retained, how were telecommunications providers going to protect it. It was going to be a honeypot and a trap and a beautiful, attractive jewel for cyber criminals and nation states. So, I mean, telcos are acutely aware of the data they hold and work hard to secure it.
Well, yeah, and you were saying before that they shouldn't have been holding on to this data for long periods of time. The Telecommunications Act of 1979 requires them to keep some data for at least 2 years. Is that a fit-for-purpose system in 2022?
Well, that's metadata. So they are required to keep, they certainly are required to identify all customers and to have to know that you are Hillary and the service you're getting matches your identity. They are certainly required to get an address. They are required to ID you at the time of point of sale. But for metadata purposes, that is the content about content, not the content of your communications, but all the pieces around how you communicate. It was not required. It was never one of the parts to keep that data. Certainly, they need to know who you are and all sorts of other details, but not exact ID like driver's license, passport, Medicare. They just need to know that you were appropriately verified under a 100 points check at the time of getting the service. So I don't know why they were keeping this data.
That's really interesting, isn't it? That I imagine a lot of companies like to hoard this data. I know that you've described it as data gluttony. What do you think the thinking is behind that tendency?
Well, the tendency is often, and I'm not suggesting this is Optus's tendency, the tendency is often, if we know so much about our customers, we can better market to them. If we know their age, we can better market to what they might want to buy. If we know them, we can segment down, will they be a customer we need to nurture and push new products to? It's all in the age of obviously better marketing, selling more, understanding more, but it can have a dark side and it can topple over into what we've called in the past surveillance capitalism. It can be that they know your customers so well that they know their way of life down to kind of their, you know, medical way of life, and that's a little bit creepy. So I think that I'm not suggesting that's the Optus situation at all, but I'm just saying it strikes me as data gluttony that you would keep this data when you have no reason to keep it.
Some really worried texts coming in during our discussion today. Rachel Falk, who's the CEO of the Cybersecurity Cooperative Research Centre. The text number 0418 226 576. Ian in Surry Hills says, I received an email from Optus advising that my personal information, including name, date of birth, passport, driver's license numbers, have all been stolen. I'm an older person, says Ian. I don't have much sophistication with technology. I'm anxious and concerned. Can someone please explain to me what I need to do? I've done nothing to deserve this. Will I be fully indemnified for any personal liabilities that may arise because bad actors have my information? Am I going to be at risk of fraud for years to come? I'm a self-funded retiree. Are my financial arrangements at risk? Very, very anxious and no real assistance or advice so far. What are some things we can say to Ian, who's in that situation of being a consumer at risk, Rachel Falk?
I really feel for Ian, and he's absolutely, I think, articulated probably the fears of many people. The most sensible thing possibly I could help with is you could always get a credit monitoring subscription. I know that Optus have come out and said for a subset of their customers they will do this, but you could always go through credit companies and get a subscription, and they monitor your credit record then, and you can see whether new credit cards have been applied for in your name, and it helps you have a little bit of a greater understanding of what's going on. But again, I get his point of he's done nothing to deserve it. Absolutely not. And that's right. People are entitled to be outraged about how this happened, because it's like the inconvenience has now shifted to the consumer. So I think the thing is, you could also all call an organisation called ID Care, who also may be able to give practical tips about what you can do. I would be very alert for emails now. I mean, double check. I know Optus have sent a few, but they've been clear about what they'll do. I would be alert to emails purporting to come from Optus saying, click here on this link to get this service. Always go back and see how Optus will be communicating to its customers around the Equifax service if you're in that category. Optus have said they won't be sending links with texts and things like that. The cyber criminals will quickly mimic what Optus puts out legitimately, so be alive to that. But absolutely, it's a terrible situation to be in. And look, it may well be that nothing comes of it whatsoever. But that's the problem with cyber breaches. It's just a harm that lurks and you don't know whether you will be impacted or not. Often the ID is used. These details can be used to be packaged up for identity theft, but maybe not. So it's just a terrible sort of waiting game. But taking control through credit monitoring is possibly one of the more proactive steps as a consumer we can do, albeit it is very irritating that people now have to fork out money and anxiety and anguish having to do this.
Yes, indeed. I can say from personal experience that ID Care are very useful. And right now they've got a whole page of links showing what actions you might need to take depending on what bits of your information have been taken. They're a Queensland-based charity. You can find them online. We're speaking with Rachel Falk, who's the CEO of the Cybersecurity Cooperative Research Centre. Obviously, you'd be going to your financial institutions and changing passwords and securing accounts and perhaps putting limits on your accounts. What about driver's license and passport? Do you need to change those numbers now?
I think that's a harder task, and I think with passport delays, probably not at the moment. It will be hard unless your passport's up for renewal. I think, again, driver's licences, whether that's a state and territory issue, whether they will be amenable to changing, I don't know, but certainly you could ask. I think basically they're the two key bits of information and data that are most sensitive for all of us. But I think, again, just being careful about how you share them going forward. And you obviously have no choice with a 100-point ID check. The problem is we share them because we have to get a service. And we hope that the entity we share it with protects it accordingly. We have no visibility of that beyond the sharing of that data. So driver's license, particularly for most of us, is the key bit of photographic identity that we have.
Yes, indeed. One text said, I'm part of the data breach and have no idea what to do. I can't exactly change my license number, so I guess I'll just have to monitor all my bank accounts and make sure no credit cards are taken out in my name. I think you can actually call your state license authority, because when mine was stolen and my identity was stolen a few years ago, I called and said, it's been stolen, so I need a new one. And they gave me a new one eventually after some haggling with a new number, which is some slight comfort. Rachel, how lucrative is this information if hackers have it in their hands? They've asked for this $1 million ransom, which seems a bit like small beans, but what value does that data have to them on the dark web?
Well, the ransom is the extortion element of making them pay so that more isn't potentially dribbled out. It may well go higher than that, depending on how much they want to extort. But again, I'm not sure if that's a real threat. It is valuable because they can repackage ID sets up and sell them on the dark web. And sometimes they package them up as a complete ID, so and then on sell that. So it can be it's on the dark web, which is a hidden part of the internet. Normal mere mortals can't use that part of the internet. We can't get onto it easily, but it's really a market bazaar for selling of ill-gotten gains from cyber theft. And that's one of the things they will do. Sell up some data, some driver's license number, some details or packages.
And is there any use Optus paying that ransom? I mean, would the data then safely go back into their hands?
Well, I can't say, I don't know about this instance, and I know the AFP are looking at this at the moment, but there have been instances in the past with ransomware. So it's similar. They lock up your data, they steal it, hold it to ransom, and then say to the organisation, if you want it back, you have to pay a ransom. It can be hundreds of thousands to millions. Sometimes they give it back, they give the data back, but they also keep a copy. Sometimes you don't get your data back. So we're dealing with criminals here. And although some of the cyber criminals behind ransomware gangs hold themselves as having sort of codes of honour around how they will deal with their business, no, there's no certainty that they will actually do what you want them to do, because they know that they're in the hot seat. So I can't comment on what's going on with Optus and whether they will pay what the AFP are going to do. But in some cases, you can pay. But always in the back of our minds is we know that the cyber criminals have often kept a copy of the data anyway.
On that driver's license issue, another text has come in. Says, I've just been to change my driver's license in New South Wales and told the department is assessing the risk. Please give the details re-ID care. That is a website that you can go to. I think they do have a phone number and you can find them online. And there will be a link on our website at Life Matters to the ID care site and also to the ACCC Scam Watch page, which has a lot of useful information here too. People asking questions about, you know, should I change my Optus password? I would go to those sites and see the information that's been aggregated there, and also go to the Optus website, because I'm sure they will be on the front foot, Rachel Falk, to try and explain to people what's going on. How well do you think that they've handled this from a customer-focused point of view?
That's a good question. I think today's admission by the CEO that the data was encrypted has not been helpful. I would have expected that unless there's been some sudden change that they would have known that early on. I think the focus has to be on the customer. It's not Optus that is the victim here. It's the customer. So, yes, it was good they came out early. It was good that the CEO fronted the media early, and that is often not the case. That is good. But at the same time, details have been scant, which I understand for some reasons. But I must admit, I'm a little confused to now come out and say the data was encrypted. Well, clearly it isn't now, and they've not explained that. And maybe they don't want to or can't explain that. But again, I still think they need more information on the website. I think they really need to own it and really work hard to, I think, restoring customer trust.
Lots of people are asking, is it confirmed that if you have no email from Optus, then you are not affected? There are people saying, I've been a customer 20 years ago. Should I be worried?
I assume that's the case. But I think, I think if they've not emailed you, you might be fine. They've also said, I think some services are not impacted. Fixed line are not impacted, I think they said. But I think it's just a great wake-up call. But yes, I wouldn't unduly worry if you have not got an email at this stage. But again, I expect Optus are assessing this constantly to see who is in, who wasn't caught. And that may change. But at the moment, you may not need to be concerned if you've not received an email.
Let's have a chat for a moment about some of the strategies around prevention and around the fallout that happens when these data breaches occur. We've got a text saying cybersecurity is a pure fiction. Every encrypted message is readable by the receiver and therefore by anyone else who has the same technology as the receiver. This is basic. Could this breach have been prevented? Is any system going to be completely cyber safe, Rachel Falk?
That's a really good question. No. I mean, there are very sophisticated nation states out there, which are kind of the equivalent of, you know, commandos or Navy SEALs who can almost get into anything. That is true. So cybersecurity is not a 100% perfect science. But we do know that for the most part, you have to make it very difficult for the hackers. You don't leave doors open, open APIs or open ports in internet so they can literally come in the front door without even having to open it. And things like encryption do matter, because if something is encrypted, it is much harder, unless they are determined to get in. It's much harder for ordinary cyber criminals to get in. They will move on to another target that's easier. Unfortunately, there are many targets that do not have great cyber security, so they can move on to them and get other data. So that's true. Encryption is not 100%, but it is really, really good. It is like having a safe that is harder to crack. You want that valuable data in the safe. But for the most part, simple measures will make companies 85% have good, solid cybersecurity posture at the 85% level. And for the most part, there are lots of systems and processes and things and detections that can even alert, so that even before a lot of data is stolen, the company already sees that something's going on at the perimeter, or there's something going on in a strange part of the system, and they can get onto it. Lots can be done. It just is very, very strange that this was able to occur in the manner in which it did, given it's a telco and so many customer records are at risk.
Yep, the chair of Electronic Frontiers Australia in an SBS article detailed all the little steps that he thought had gone wrong on the way. There were quite a few. So Home Affairs and Cybersecurity Minister Claire O'Neill says that she wants Optus to be able to hand that copied data to people's banks so they can keep those affected people's accounts safer, but privacy laws prevent this at the moment. What are your thoughts on that balance?
I think that's right. I think the challenge is often the cross-vesting. You don't necessarily want everyone being able to freely share, and telcos being able to freely share data with your bank, etc. So they do have to ironically go through these processes, rightly so, and make sure that they've got the right processes in place to release the data to the bank so that the data is aware and can cross-match its customers. I think that's good. I think obviously government wants to do the right thing here, and Claire O'Neill has said that they're going to work hard to do that. I guess in a way you don't want to re-victimise and assume that the customer is comfortable, so they are following the law with respect to sharing of data.
Well, the penalties issue is interesting too, isn't it? Because some coalition members want the government to strengthen penalties for cybercrime. How often are cyber criminals caught?
Very rarely. In Australia, they have caught some in the past, COVID-related puppy scams. I think that was in Australia. The issue is catching the Australian crims is somewhat easier, and AFP and state and territory police do a good job of that. It's many of these cyber criminals are offshore, and they're offshore in jurisdictions that we simply don't have extradition treaties with. So the chances of catching and convicting are very, very low.
Mark in Alice Springs texts in, Optus must pay affected people double the actual cost to obtain a new driver's licence and or replacement passport. He says double payment at least as a penalty and as time compensation for the process, which I can attest is very time consuming. But Slater and Gordon are talking about class action. Would that be useful to affected customers, Rachel?
Look, it's open to customers to consider whether they want to contact Slater and Gordon for a class action. Sometimes people feel it's a sort of a process that makes them feel better. It might not actually deliver them much of an outcome, but they want to send a message to whoever's had the breach. I think that's absolutely right by the person who texted in. It is, as you say, you've had your identity compromised. It is time consuming. It is distressing. It is distracting. And let's face it, how much money would actually make us feel better? Maybe a whole bunch of money would make you feel better if it's done. The problem is, once the genie's out of the bottle, it's really hard to put that ID genie back in the bottle, and no amount of money will often compensate us for that. And the law doesn't really recognise these harms very well. The Privacy Act actually does have triggers that will recognise it, but beyond that, it's very hard. Courts don't recognise it. But I absolutely appreciate and can share the frustration that this the customers and the victims have done nothing wrong, and now they're having to scramble to endure anguish and having to monitor, you know, get new documents and do all sorts of things. So I think it's also about having stronger disincentives or stronger incentives to do the right thing, and much higher fines. I have no doubt the reputational fallout for Optus has not been good, and inevitably customers vote with their feet if they choose to not remain with Optus after this. That's a matter for them, of course. But I think the ultimate aim of the game here is to make it, to ensure, and it's a wake-up call for all companies, not just a telco, for all companies in Australia to start doing an audit of all their PII that they have in their systems, both their own systems and those of third parties that they contract out to around the globe, and see where it is and who's protecting it and how well it is protected. This is a huge wake-up call, because it looks like Claire O'Neill will want to actually work with the attorney on changing some of the laws and potentially having far harsher penalties.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that goes in coming months. Rachel Falk, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Rachel Falk, CEO of the Cyber Security Cooperative Research Centre, joining us on her holidays, which was a pretty big ask. And we'll have links to the ACCC ScamWatch page and ID Care, that Queensland-based charity that can help out with strategies if this has happened to you, on the Life Matters homepage.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.